This narrator advises that the listener digest the following as entertainment. The showrunners behind it are neither six-figure filmmakers nor professional critics. They are casually critical.
Hello, and welcome to Casually Critical, the podcast show starring two pals who love to talk about storytelling. I am your co-host, James Newton.
And I'm Daniel Carpenter, your co-host. Some of the things that we do here on Casually Critical are very interesting, but one of them is that, James, you and I have accidentally started a bit of a tradition. So, starting with season one of our podcast, we reviewed the original Kung Fu Panda movie. And then in season two, we reviewed Kung Fu Panda 2. So it seems only fitting that we should review Kung Fu Panda 3 for season three of Casually Critical. So we're going to Kung Fu punch our way through this movie. We're going to talk about it. And then towards the latter half of this podcast episode, we might be getting a little bit more intense. We might be channeling our chi. The dark part of chi, as we delve deep into the spirit realm of spoilers. And so, if you don't want your life sucked out of you, or replenished to you, depending on which way our conversation pivots, keep that in mind, but we will let you know as soon as that happens. Spoiler warning for Kung Fu Panda 3 and the latter half. However, throughout this entire episode, we might be referencing Kung Fu Panda 1 and 2. So please keep that in mind moving forward.
Yeah.
So James, I'm very interested to know, before we delve too much into this third movie, what is your overall opinion of the Kung Fu Panda franchise?
I think it's a very consistent franchise. I think similar to How to Train Your Dragon, they do a very good job of maintaining tone and really fixing their eyes on characters and the world and remembering the themes of previous movies. I would even argue that Shrek does this pretty well too, except for the third one. If you skip over the third, first, second, and fourth are actually pretty consistent as well. So DreamWorks doesn't do such a bad job at this, and Kung Fu Panda is no exception. Every single entry into the series peels back another layer of our main protagonist, Po, and further helps us get to know him better as he gets to know himself. And in this instance, Po is being challenged in a way outside of himself, which is as far as I'll go for now, but it's really interesting to see because the first two are a lot about who am I, where did I come from, what am I supposed to be, and they explore that even more in the third movie, and it feels natural. Do you have any additional thoughts about the trilogy as a whole?
I actually have thoughts about DreamWorks as an animation company. I think a lot of different animation companies have a lot of different strengths. I think Leica is good with visual risk taking. I think Pixar, at least for most of its career, was really good at original organic storytelling. But DreamWorks, I find, excels at franchise building. I think it is, of all the animation companies, it is the most consistently good when it comes to sequels. I haven't seen Trolls World Tour, so I'm going to withhold judgment on that. It's had its fair share of misses, don't get me wrong. But I think you're absolutely right when it comes to consistency. The whole Kung Fu Panda trilogy is incredibly consistent, and Po's arc of identity plays a vital role in all the movies. The first movie is about him becoming a Kung Fu master. Second movie is about him becoming more than a Kung Fu master. And the third one is him learning to become a teacher, learning to become a mentor, which threw me off guard because I thought, of course, it feels so perfect because he's becoming this uber duber Kung Fu machine. And then now they're saying, okay, the best, most logical way to push him is how can he train that to other people? You know, Shifu was this massive mentor figure. What my favorite character in the movie consistently. I love Dustin Hoffman's performance. But
yes,
realizing how daunting it is that, poke and kick butt, that's no longer a question anymore. But now it becomes, oh my gosh, he's a great warrior, but he has no experience teaching. And so there are these amazing ways. I figured Poe was powerful enough already, incredibly overpowered, but they're finding new ways to challenge him. So Kung Fu Panda 4, a few weeks prior to this recording, just got announced. So I'm really interested to see how DreamWorks continues this arc moving forward. But this movie does a great job, at least, of continuing that as well. So, James, we both think this movie is incredibly consistent, but I am curious to know. I remember from our Kung Fu Panda 2 review back in Season 2, we did have some gripes about interrupting the dramatic momentum. And I personally think Kung Fu Panda 3 does this a few times. And there's one specific moment where I won't touch on it until the spoiler review. But Kung Fu Panda 3 is consistent, but is it a consistent good?
I would say yes. I would say it sticks the landing in terms of a Kung Fu Panda movie, which does include moments where the seriousness is broken up for comedy, because this is, yes, primarily a comedy film with action. But it's also good as a standalone film because there's no ongoing plot from the second movie that's dragged into the third that isn't clearly spelled out once again in the third movie. And that's great. It does well as a standalone film. It helps that you know who Poe is. You know, you could probably even skip the second one, just watch 1 and 3 if you wanted to. I still think you should check out number 2 because it has some of the best action in the franchise. But and some really cool visuals and sets and things. That's where 2 really shines for me. But 3 has just as much, if not more, heart than the first movie. Because Poe's moving on from who am I to how can I use, like, how can I take who I am and benefit others with it? We get a lot more scenes without Poe in them, which is really interesting. Some of them following the villain, but others of them following some of the other Furious Five. We see those characters off doing their side things, and we get them built out a little bit more, albeit in comedic ways. But it's really branching out beyond Poe. And I think that really fits in with the theme of Poe learning how to work with others. Not that he had much trouble with it anyway, but he just was so busy working on himself that he didn't really have a chance to share his skills until now. How can he impose the things that he's learned in the first and second movie and bring them down to a learning, like a low level of learning for these people that he's trying to train? And it all flows really well, I think. And I once again cried in this film, as I have in every other Kung Fu Panda movie, because it just gets you. It sucker punches you with some really heartfelt moments that I really appreciate. Very mature, mature scenes in these movies, specifically the third one.
Yeah, it's amazing to see. I think the saddest part for me was this movie had, I'm not an expert on all things animation for 2016, but the very last movie we reviewed, Kubo and the Two Strings, came out the exact same year that Kung Fu Panda 3 did. And I remember seeing this by myself in theaters when I was visiting home from college during the summer, I believe. And it spoke to me in a spiritual way. I'm not going to lie to you. There's some interesting imagery and really fun choices, but I don't remember there being a lot of hype for this movie. I don't remember people talking about this movie a whole lot. In fact, when I mentioned it to some people, they said there's a third one. And so that disappoints me. It really does, because many franchises, especially one with as much kid appeal that Kung Fu Panda typically has, it never really feels full of itself, pun intended. You know, it's never a big bloated mess. It's a refined, really well done film that does a few things really well under the surface. It's what Minions thinks it is.
Really? Does Minions even think it's anything, Daniel? I feel like you're giving Minions too much credit.
I am, actually. I think Minions wants to be, I think what Minions wants to be is not a work of art, but a pile of Ben Franklin's. I do think that's what it's trying to be.
Yes.
So I apologize. I'll take that back. But yeah, overall, for all of its flaws and all of its successes, Kung Fu Panda 3 is really solid and completes for me what I find to be consistently the most enjoyable, one of the most enjoyable franchises. I still find myself thinking about the first Kung Fu Panda movie a lot because it did so much really well. Mm-hmm. I will say this, one thing I like about Kung Fu Panda 3, and come to think of it, Kung Fu Panda 2 is okay with this, but Kung Fu Panda 3 brings the world down in scope. So we see a lot of visuals, we see a lot of vistas, we're in a lot of different places, but it's really about a very small group of characters. And yeah, the five are in here, and yeah, Shifu's in here, and all these other characters, but there's, especially towards the end of the movie, it whittles itself down to just the core characters. And I think that's a really clever and helpful storytelling tool that a lot of franchise movies I like do really well. When they start getting bigger and bigger and bigger, they find ways to do that. You know, Infinity War was a great, massive movie, but then Endgame took all those characters, whittled them down, and focused just on those core characters. And Kung Fu Panda 3 does that, but very stealthily. You don't really notice it. But it's really good.
And another example we could look at, and I'm sure you would mention as well, is War for the Planet of the Apes, the third in the new Planet of the Apes trilogy, is very good at bringing scale down and making it personal once again somehow, which, yeah, incredibly impressive. I do think Kung Fu Panda does a really good job at this. For being a martial arts movie, they never say, we need to have a giant open war sequence. They never do that, and I really respect that. I respect that a lot about this franchise. But from a 3,000-foot view, Daniel, can we really quick just compare and contrast? Because maybe some people here haven't seen Kung Fu Panda 3. In terms of action, in terms of visuals, in terms of comedy, how does this movie compare to the other two?
That's a really good point. I don't want to go all over the place, so I'll keep my answer short, or at least I'll try to. Kung Fu Panda 3 does action in a very different way than the rest of the Kung Fu Panda movies do. And that's because primarily, and this is no spoilers here, but we're introducing a strange energy called Chi. They bring Chi into this movie, and they do a fairly good job at kind of writing around why we've never heard of this before and why now, here and now, it's being introduced into the world. They do an amazing job with that. Yeah. Again, a lot of small things that they don't really call attention to that you have to think about and go, wow, that was actually really graceful in how they did all that. So because this fighting is on another level, there's really not a lot of physicality to it. The first Kung Fu Panda movie was about the physicality, the fighting. Po needs to get good. Well, what does getting good look like? Okay, well, let's look at the Furious Five. Let's look at Tai Lung. Let's look at Shifu and Oogway. Those are examples of how to get good. The second Kung Fu Panda movie is personal. So the fighting isn't really all that different, but it is more of a personal tone to it. This is Po learning more about his past and some repressed trauma that he went through that he has to unearth and he has to address if he is to face against this evil, which for the first time, this evil ends up overpowering him. In this third movie, it's more about the spiritual, the cosmic, the bigger than ourselves kind of realm. And it honestly, for me, and I will touch on this more in the spoiler review, it kind of took out, I feel like, what could have been a lot of life from the action sequences. The main villain is portrayed as this unstoppable killing machine, I guess, because he has a mastery over Chi. And I don't think the action sequences played up that dynamic enough. It didn't really, and I know I'm comparing apples to oranges because Rogue One is not a kids movie, but that Darth Vader scene in Rogue One, I wish it had been more of that. I felt more of the dynamics here, but it kind of just felt to me like, oh, it's a Kung Fu master that knows Chi instead of no one can stop this guy except for Poe, and Poe better find a way because he's coming for him. So that's what I have to say on that. What are your thoughts?
Well, to piggyback on, you know, the villain and the action therein, I feel like there wasn't a whole lot of dread surrounding this villain. I think the first two villains in Kung Fu Panda are the strongest. Tai Lung being my favorite, followed by Emperor Shang, I think.
Lord Shen.
Lord Shen, thanks. Wow, it's been a while. both of those villains, I dread seeing Poe confront these people because they're scary. They do threatening things. In this one, the villain being voiced by J.K. Simmons, who would be great and is great. He does a great job with what he's given. He quickly dismantles people and their defenses and breaks them down. And often off screen, destroys people. And he doesn't outwit them in any way. He doesn't do any really cool, like, martial arts based on real martial arts that we've seen, like you would see in the first two movies. He really just does a thing, and then he's mastered them, and he wins. As a result, I don't feel afraid for Poe, because I know that this insta-kill technique that this master brings to this enemy brings to the table is obviously not going to work on Poe, because it would end the action sequence before it even started, just like every other action sequence leading up. So in that way, the action is pretty weak in comparison to the other two, but it makes up for it in heart, like I said before, and it's a visually strong movie. I really, really like the visuals, the environments especially, and they really own up the martial arts roots in this movie. This is whenever toon shading really started to become more relevant in animation, 3D animation specifically, where everything just looks like a really cool comic book. Basically, there were a bunch of sequences that looked a lot like the first dream sequence in the first Kung Fu Panda movie, and they break up the frame, they smack, you know, the training sequence in the first movie. There's a lot more like that, where the frame's getting broken up into different pieces and the transitions into other montages are just really clear. And I wish I had specific examples, but it's been 2 weeks since I saw this movie, so I can't remember. But there's some really cool stuff that keeps those training montages and traveling montages quick and snappy and engaging. These necessary scenes that ordinarily would be pretty bland, but in this movie, I'm just like, oh yeah, I'm here for this. I love this. Wow, everything's blue now. Okay, everything's red. Oh, I'm, you know, this rocks. Okay. And then in terms of humor, I do really think this is a funny movie. I don't think it's as funny as the first one, but I do think it's funnier than the second for sure. The humor kind of grinds to a halt in the second movie in some ways, which we talked about in our second Kung Fu Panda review, but that's all I'll touch on for now, but
for sure. So James, let's bring this to the chopping block. Out of 5 stars. Would you change any of your ratings for the first two movies? And regardless of that, what would you rate this one?
Okay. I'm just because I don't remember my original ratings.
And sometimes movies linger in my mind for longer and my rating changes and I just don't know it. So
yeah,
maybe you could give us your ratings as they are now in your mind for all three movies.
The first Kung Fu Panda movie, I'm giving a strong 4 out of 5 stars. If I could give it an 8.5 out of 10, I would. But once again, the 5-star rating system. The second one, I would give a 3.5 out of 5, and I will give the third one that same rating, 3.5 out of 5.
Dang, this is hard. I would say very similar. First movie, is a 4.5. I would go so far as to say 4.9. Debate. Oh, we'll say 4.75. First one's a 4.75. I love so much of it. I will rewatch it. Yeah. The second movie for me is...
You know what, Daniel? You're right. The first Kung Fu Panda deserves a 4.5 out of 5. I'm changing mine.
Oh.
I do think it stands high above its successors, which are both good, strong films. But the first one has everything that the second and third have, but better in most areas. Less fleshed out, but better.
Yeah. I would say you threw me off because you gave 2 and 3 the same rating, and I hadn't thought of it that way before. I think they are the same rating, but for different reasons. I think the flaws and strengths in both kind of make them both the same overall quality.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, gosh dang it, I'd have to agree with you, 3.5 for both. I love both, but... when it comes to watching them again, I just don't know if I would. I think I would be more open to rewatching the second one.
Yeah.
From a story perspective than I would the third one.
The second one is a really fun ride in a lot of ways. The third one has more heart.
The second one has more of what I want to see in a martial arts film, and the third one is what I want to see more of in a traditional film.
Yes, that's good. That's good, because the second one has brilliant action. But the comedy's not as good. It's just not as funny. There were less laugh-out-loud moments in the second one than the third.
Gary Oldman is Lord Shen. I can't ignore that.
Yeah,
but
strong.
I remember there being some warning signs in the second one. Like, there's a whole rickshaw chase sequence on rooftops that feels incredibly gimmicky and feels very much for the kids, very much for just fluff. It's not really motivated by a lot. And so I was like, careful. And the third one kind of, you know, has more heart than it does gimmicks. But the humor for all three is honestly, for me, the reason why I don't give these movies higher ratings.
Even the first one?
Even the first one.
Wow.
Harsh. I remember, and I don't want to talk too much about the first two movies because it's about the third one, but... I remember the first one, it built up Poe really well, and all the humor in the first one really came from Poe, his boyishness, his fanboyishness, and it also came from the dread and epic presence of Tai Lung. And then their fight sequence at the end felt very, I don't know, inconsequential. It felt like there were very low stakes, and at the same time, that's hard for me to say, because I know where the writers were going with that, and I know that it's hard keeping up the stakes when Poe has already discovered the secret to being a Kung Fu warrior. So it's really hard to write something like that. But
when you're having a Poe-centric fight, it can't be serious. I feel like we did talk about this in our review for the first one.
But then the second one does that differently, because I remember when Poe first encounters Lord Shen, there is humor because you hear this like big thumping, like, and then, you know, Shen himself is kind of quivering, and then it just shows that Poe's being carried
what
by
is
a
this
gorilla.
Giant gorilla,
and then he comes face to face with Poe, and Poe's kind of winning in their little dialogue banter because Shen is a more verbal villain than Tai Lung is. And so Poe is kind of dismissive of him at first. Very much like, yeah, I got a plan, whatever. And then once they start to fight, Shen's patterns on his feathers, Poe recognizes and it throws him off. And Shen's able to kick Poe's butt. And he learns that he has this advantage over Poe and he leans into that. So even then, Poe's humor is put at bay and he still defeats Poe in very non-comedic ways. He's menacing because of what he represents. And Poe doesn't know what he represents. In the third one, we have a villain that isn't very personal to Poe, and though they try, but they have a huge, huge problem with that.
Yeah.
And so if they had solved the villain problem for this movie, if they had been a bit more tight of a leash on Jack Black in terms of the humor, I think these movies would have been a lot better overall, if not a little bit more. So, I don't know. But yeah, 3.5 stars for Kung Fu Panda 3, but I do enjoy it. I just don't think it's the best martial art movie or animated movie or family movie that I've seen. So, but overall, I don't regret watching it. And that's more than I can say for a lot of other 3 or 3.5 star movies.
All right, then. Let's double time it to the spoiler zone then.
Want to join the conversation? Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Casually Critical Podcast to get the inside scoop on future episodes. Feel free to message us on either platform to join in the casual correspondence or provide feedback on the show. Now it's time to dive into our spoiler review.
Okay, first off, gotta say, quick shout-outs to my boy J.K. Simmons, because when he shows up, it's always an unexpected pleasure and it's always a good time. And then second, James, I wanted to give this movie a higher rating because, dang it, they brought back my boy Oogway. They brought back Randall Duckim, and I am so here for it. Just at the end, you know, Poe's like, "What? I can have your cane? You mean it?" And Oogway goes, "Yes."
Just I like, have a bigger one.
I'm like, Oogway, never change.
I thought you were going to mention Bryan Cranston as Lee Shan, Poe's father. I thought he did an extraordinary job.
Oh, he did amazing. I love that scene where they're hanging out in the temple. Just there's certain voice cracks that Bryan Cranston does that just perfectly encapsulate that nerdy father that's just super into his son and super into just having fun.
Yes.
He's the quintessential dad. And he does a fantastic job.
He does do a great job. And he plays a dad in almost everything I've seen him in, but usually a pretty terrible dad.
Yes.
I.e. Malcolm in the Middle and Breaking Bad. But in this one, he's actually a really great dad, except for one moment in which he deceives Poe. How do we feel about the liar revealed kind of subplot here? Where he's like, "I don't know anything about Chi." And Poe's like, "Why'd you bring me here then?"
The reason I wanted to talk about that is I don't have an issue necessarily with that. It resonated with me in a weird way because they didn't really ever resolve that.
Hmm.
Like, you know, I watched this movie for, I think, the second or third time now, knowing that that twist would come. And number one, they don't linger on it for too long. Number two, once the climax is done, we never talk about it again. And I'm just thinking, okay, Poe has never met his biological family. He's never met a single panda that looks like him. He is the most minority of minorities in the entirety of the valley. And then he finds his father, and they connect on just such an immediate level. His father tells him about the universe. His father tells him about this panda village. His father tells him about them mastering Chi, and Poe asks, "Can you teach me?" And he's like, "Well, yes, but you got to come home with me, son." And I'll be honest with you, based on the way they establish his character throughout the entirety of the movie, this move doesn't seem to me like his character. It really doesn't feel like him. And it doesn't ever get doubled back and addressed. It just feels like, well, we need to find a way to explain why none of the pandas know Chi and Poe needs to train them. So he lied to him. And yeah, that's low-hanging fruit, but it works. It bothers me. I don't know if it bothered you, James, but it irked me.
This is one of those few liar-revealed subplots that doesn't bother me. And that's really because we don't have to spend all this time in the dark night of the soul between the two main characters. Because the movie keeps going. Poe's like, "Hey, I got to deal with this." I almost said Khan. Got to deal with this Kai guy. We got to keep moving. And his dad, being his dad, is like, "I understand if you don't want me to be in your life anymore, but I'm going to help you." And it's like, okay, you're a loyal dad. You know, like, we don't have to have this immature sort of instance where the characters go away by themselves and have to remember why, you know, they were together in the first place, whether they were, you know, in love or they were partners or they were, you know, comrades. But in this case, it's just like, ah, you lied. Well, moving on. And
you're saying, you're basically saying there's bigger fish to fry in that moment than dwelling on dad lying.
There is bigger fish to fry, and I understand where he came from. I do think it was a little bit out of character, but there were some precocious moments of Lee Shan kind of being like, oh no, son, like, are you okay? Like, he goes in, like, shows his dad, like, a training sequence, and he's, like, really concerned for him. So, like, that helicopter dad, also motivated by losing the only other person in his life that he loved, that was his family.
That's true.
I was like, okay, that makes sense. I don't think you're a liar kind of guy, but this is, if you ever had to lie once in your life to get your son away from a dangerous place, this would be the time. So
yeah,
I was cool with it for the most part.
Yeah, that's fair. I think I would have liked there to be some more personal redemption beyond just double dad defense. maybe, I don't know, like, maybe I'm reading way too much into this, but maybe at one point Lee Shan and Po's other father, who I can't remember, Mr. Ping, Lee Shan and Mr. Ping are, you know, fighting, and then Lee sees Kai, you know, taking down Po, maybe towards the end when Po's kind of splayed out in front of everyone and he's bruised, beaten, battered, and Kai appears, maybe Lee Shan, as a last-ditch effort, stands between Kai and his son, knowing he can't do anything but trying, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. And then it could be like either Kai absorbs his chi or just like punches him to the side and he goes flying away. You know, something small, but something more personal. Like, I failed you once, I'm not going to fail you again. Maybe that's too cheesy, but...
You know, I think I have figured out a way that we could make the action better, make the villain better, and make some room for this moment to happen, Daniel.
I mean, I'd be stupid if I told you not to tell me what this brilliant idea is.
Get rid of the jade zombies. They just get sucked into the spirit realm, and it's just Kai, and he's the one taking all these people down by himself. We don't have any goons that we have to deal with. It's just him and his super long swinging chain blades, which were super cool in concept and super dreadful. I feel like that would give him he'd be more scary. I don't know. He doesn't have to use his jade zombies to find where everybody is. He's a spiritually sensitive dude. We can find other ways around him finding where the hidden village is.
Plus, you already have the visual of once he absorbs someone's chi, they're kind of a pendant on his, you know, on his person. So you know where they go once he absorbs them.
Exactly. We don't need to throw him out again like a Pokeball. Like this, it's like, all right, Tigress, I choose you. You know, I don't really love that part. I feel like that's a low light for me, is just like, oh, we need to give him some bad guys to beat up on, but not the main villain. And I'm like, but these are kung fu masters, you know, that are being thrown out. Why are they so easily dismantled? So
right, and even, you know, other kung fu masters like Mantis, who's super super small and fast.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think Kai would have extra trouble with some of them, like even Thanos in Infinity War, where there's a similar plot where he's taking down all these heroes.
Uh-huh.
He has a harder time with Captain Marvel or Thor than he does, say, Captain America or Black Panther. You know,
right.
His experience fighting these people is largely contingent on their skills, intellect, talent, and tactics. Captain America is a fearsome foe against terrorists and Adolf Hitler. He's not that fearsome a foe up against a cosmically powerful being.
Right.
You know, like Iron Man holds his ground because he's got a variety of tactics, resources, and intellect, but he's not able to hold his own. So his experience with all these people, Thanos, it varies, and I like that. I wish Kai did the same thing.
And so whenever we see Master Shifu turned into a jade zombie and sent after the panda village, it's like, seriously?
Yeah.
This is probably the strongest kung fu warrior on the face of the world at this point, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Outside of Po, but he's only strong because he believes in himself, you know? There's no other reason. He doesn't have nearly as much experience.
You also think about it, Kai's whole motivation here is dismantling Oogway's legacy, which sounds awesome. You know, I have very personal motivation for him. Oogway's legacy, we are led to believe, is hundreds of Kung Fu masters. And of all of them, aside from the Dragon Warrior, obviously being probably the greatest, Shifu was at Oogway's right-hand side the longest and presided over, and he was the one that Oogway gave his staff to when he passed away in the first movie. So Shifu, Po might be the most famous, but Shifu is probably the longest lasting, most enduring protege of Oogway. So
yeah.
I'm shocked there wasn't more personal nature. And they even touch on a little bit that Shifu's face when he sees Kai using Oogway's statue to destroy the Jade Palace, you know, that horror and that sorrow inside of him. I wish they had touched on that more.
Mm-hmm.
Going off what you're saying about the zombies, I don't know why. Maybe this is the artistic side of my brain. Character design wise, I don't think we need to see Kai's face. I would have loved him to wear a mask.
Huh.
Keep him this big, hulking, big reindeer, but then have him have a face mask where you can only see his glowing green eyes, you know? I feel like that, coupled with J.K. Simmons' voice, this big kind of brawny masked man who fought by Oogway's side, maybe at the end the mask gets ripped off and we see his face. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot more meat on the potato that is Kai that you could add to it.
Yeah.
Beyond just, he's a creature with blades.
And instead of like the whole, you haven't heard of me sort of like running gag.
Yeah.
It could instead be, who is this guy? And maybe he's trying to keep his identity a secret because his weakness lies in like maybe the way that Oogway defeated him before or something. There could be a mystery, you know, going through the plot too.
And that's what I hated is.
Wait, sorry. I loved it. No, wait. I mean, it was the worst. Sorry, that was very similar words.
No, the comedy does my boy so dirty in this. And by my boy, I mean Kai. Because the villain reveal is a very important moment. It's a very important moment. And the first two Kung Fu Panda movies do this so right. The first Kung Fu Panda movie, what's our first appearance of Tai Lung? He's chained up. And we don't even see his face. It's obscured in shadow. He's in a prison that was built and exists solely to keep him locked in there. It revolves around him. It is a world designed to keep him trapped there. So you have this world building, you have this setup, and then he escapes with a single feather that he uses to unlock all these intricate restraints he has. And then he breaks free. And after that, he's just a nonstop machine. Just plowing through the guards, plowing out of the prison, blowing it up, plowing through the five, plowing through Shifu, all these people that stand in his way. What's the villain reveal for Lord Shen, aside from the expository things we're told about him? He shows back up at home, protected and under watch by two Kung Fu masters. He dispatches two of the masters quickly. The third one, the rhinoceros, beats him with his hammer. But we learn that Shen's planned for this, and he reveals his cannon, which he uses to annihilate this Kung Fu master. Later, when Po and the others show up, all we see that's left of the rhino is his hammer.
Yep.
And that's it. That is grim as it gets. So right away, out of the gate, both movies make it clear, these guys are not to be messed with. The first time we introduce to Kai is we see Oogway, my boy, and then 30 seconds later, he's like, now what? And then Kai shows up, he's like, I'm here for a rematch. And then he's like,
he's like a big wrestler. He's a big WrestleMania guy. That's his personality in this movie.
And Oogway's response to Kai isn't one of horror. It isn't one of, you know, oh my gosh, you've gotten stronger and why are you here? It's, our battle ended 500 years ago, you know?
Yep.
And then Kai says something and then they attack and it feels cartoony. And then our first proper introduction of him into the mortal realm is he appears in this cosmic portal and he sees two farmers and then they go, who? And in that moment, I'm thinking, okay, Kai is an ancient figure. He has been dead for hundreds of years. So what he lacks in knowledge of this realm, he makes up for in his battle expertise and his ability to keep cool in crisis situations. So instead of him responding like, maker of widows, beast of vengeance, you know, instead of that, I would have loved for him to kind of just chuckle and, I don't know, maybe he could say a few menacing lines.
He could say something like, it really has been a long time, hasn't it? Since I've been in the mortal realm. You'll know my name soon enough. Something like that. Then he dispatches the farmers. You know, he just ends them right there.
Exactly. Which, considering Kai's history and as a writer, considering... Sorry, not him as a writer, but me as a person that likes
writing
to write.
His memoirs in this, in Kung Fu Panda 4.
I was awesome. No, but Kai has experience as a warrior. So him above everyone else should know how to keep his cool in the heat of battle. When you're surrounded by chaos, how do you stay focused on what's in front of you? You know? And I assume that as a warrior, when there's probably taunting going on by these enemies, probably a lot of crass taunting, you've learned how to not let that get to your head. You're able to keep cool, focus on what's in front of you, not worry about the tauntings or the distractions of other enemies. So when Kai appears and all these people are like, cut the chit-chat, chitty-chitty-chat-chat, you know, or who? It's just, like, for Poe, maybe, because that's him, he's incredibly irreverent, but from farmers... From other kung fu masters that take themselves really seriously.
I mean, to be fair, the farmer did lay like 1,200 eggs. So,
oh, yeah, that was fun. But that's funny because it's dark humor.
Yeah.
You know, it's like pooping his pants pretty much. But it doesn't really call attention to itself beyond just,
yeah,
I'm crapping myself because I'm terrified. And then they confuse him. They're like, wait, who? You know, and it just, for me, I'm like, I don't care if I'm walking around dooby-dooby-doo. And then a portal appears and this massive figure emerges. I'm not going to care. I probably don't know who he is either way. I'm not going to care. I'm just going to care about staying alive, you know?
Yeah. This is my, anyway. I think this is my last thought before we wrap things up. And, you know, if you have anything else,
sure,
go ahead. But I do think the villain entrance signifies a lot of the weaknesses of this movie. You described the first two villain entrances quite elaborately for the first two Kung Fu Panda movies, and it's made me realize those movies, they exhibit, they show, they don't tell, and there's a tremendous amount of well-choreographed action that shows you this is a sophisticated fighter. This one, it's a big CG blast that blasts into a cornfield. And I feel like that is the perfect analogy for how this movie's action compares to the action of the first two. Instead of really cool choreographed fight scenes in interesting places, we get weird CG magic stuff going on instead, which does not sell the thing that we were buying for this movie. We wanted martial arts sequences. We didn't get a whole lot of those. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. There's a really amazing scene with a chain, like a chain weapon with a blade on the end of it. Like, I know that that's a real weapon. Like, they could have used, like, there's so many cool examples of martial arts sequences that use interesting weapons. Like, can we draw on that again? Can we just use, like, a real-life technique as a jumping-off point? Similar to, you know, Avatar The Last Airbender with all the bending styles and their martial arts styles based on that. Kung Fu Panda did that well in the first two movies. Not so in this one. And that also kind of plays out in the third act as well with the final battle between Po and Kai. Wow, keep forgetting his name.
Yeah.
but it's a CG thing. You know, it's just CG. Right. There's not a whole lot of, like, really cool action. The lighting is great. The visuals are cool. But there's not intricate martial arts going on. So,
As someone that is a big fan of villains done really well, I keep thinking in my head, what separates Kai from the other villains? So Tai Lung is a relentless machine. He's relentless. That's him. He'll be sprinting towards a place and he'll fight all the people hand to hand. Lord Shen is very technical. So he invented fireworks as a weapon. He thinks strategically. He uses his large numbers of men and his brilliant genius level IQ, big brain, bird brain, to wipe out and eviscerate his enemies. He doesn't need to be the strongest guy in the room, only the smartest. Kai, he's played more like Tai Lung in this movie. He's physical, but he lacks the raw coldness that Tai Lung did that makes him so interesting. I'm thinking about when Kai enters the Jade Palace. We hear the clanking of his chains, but we also see him walking towards us. So the mystery is immediately gone. I'm thinking about like the clamping of Batman's boots in The Batman, which we reviewed earlier, you know. There's a lot of mystery this figure can have. And one thing that gets me thinking is he's from the spirit realm. He was defeated by Oogway 500 years ago. He spent 500 years finding a way to get back. And I feel like tapping into that patience of by Kai simply being patient, he has absorbed the chi of all the kung fu masters, you know, which we don't even see, by the way. We don't really see him using the chi that he's harvested. He just kind of is strong and exists. But I don't know, like that idea of with every foe he takes, you know, Kai becomes stronger. I would have loved to see more of that. This idea that Kai is a force. He can't be stopped any more than you can stop a tsunami, right? Tai Lung is a man. You can defeat him pretty easily once you're good. You know, Lord Shen can be destroyed, but Kai can't. And if you give him the chance, he'll destroy you and become even more powerful. So I wish that it played into that a bit. This coldness of, if you trap me, I'll wait 100 years and then I'll find you again, you know? This idea that Kai might be eternal because he's spiritual. I don't know.
Or maybe I'm gushing even at this point. The manifestation of the stealing the key, the chi of the other kung fu warriors. Maybe he extracts their techniques as well, their martial arts techniques. He takes them and, you know, for brief instances, maybe there's like a flashing silhouette of Tigress, and then he does a series of moves that she would do, hand to hand. We just don't get a whole lot of that. We don't get a whole lot of thought behind the action, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, this villain dissection was really rather fun. I will say the ending, I just got to say one, the kung fu fighting at the end, it felt a little bit, you get chi and you get chi and you get chi and everyone knows chi now. And I was thinking to myself, okay, this is presented as an advanced kung fu mastery technique to make a flower grow. And now Po is saying, if you do this and follow my lead, you can all have glowing yellow high fives. And it felt too much.
Yeah, unfortunately, this film does too well at playing into the themes of the first two, which is if you believe in yourself and become the best you can be, you can do anything. So be the best you can be the most you possible. And as a result, that's anyone can cook, you know, anyone can cook. And as a result, we have everyone's a kung fu master. Anyone can be a kung fu master, which I guess makes sense based on the logic of the first movie. There's no secret ingredient, you know, it's just you. So it's sad that it's consistent because it does really, really take away from the kung fu mythos, I think.
It does. And even if you believe in that saying, anyone can cook, it doesn't change the fact that very many people choose not to.
Yep.
You know, like for me right now, I'm in my apartment. I've got my kitchen over there. I've got my pots, my pans, and I have the money necessary to go out to a grocery store and buy some ingredients, right? So I can cook. But I'm choosing not. I choose not to.
I make that's some. Good to know. You know, Daniel, I was wondering if you were cooking. It's good to know that you're still not.
Anyone can cook, but a lot of us choose to do the microwavable mac and cheese.
I worry.
Or the root beer.
Daniel, your health is a present concern.
It's the suspenseful side of me, James. I like to keep people guessing if they'll see me on air next week. You know, it's a,
will Daniel it's survive a fun... to do our next review? Who knows?
Who knows? Well, diabetes aside,
name another podcast that says that right before they outro. Name one other show that says that.
You won't. You won't.
Yeah. There's some really fun comedy in this movie. I don't have specific jokes and I don't want to recite them to you, but it's worth watching. And I feel like we tore apart this villain. And because of who this villain is, it does take away from the quality. But there's a lot of strong things about it too, which is why it stands on equal footing with the second one, in my opinion. So that's all I'll say.
Right. So before we conclude this episode, James, really quickly, Kung Fu Panda 4 is coming out. What are two or three things that you think would make it a great movie?
To follow along with our discussion, I want a strong villain that's personal, and I want a well-thought-out team of animators that know their martial arts and study martial arts, because we got to bring that back. Like, I feel like that's some of the most Kung Fu Panda-ist things, and they were lacking in the third. What about you?
I would love for Kung Fu Panda 4 to do what a certain animated movie could not, and that is take the teaser, take the plot and concept that the Frozen 2 teaser trailer promised me, and deliver it.
Ooh.
The first Kung Fu Panda movie came out in 2008, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And we've all grown up with that. So the demographic that would know and understand the Kung Fu Panda lore is a lot older. So I would worry less about playing it for kiddies. Plus, How to Train Your Dragon kind of did this with The Hidden World.
Yeah.
You know, and even the sequel, the second one, both were more mature movies.
It got darker, yeah.
Hiccup grew up, right. And so here's my thought, James, and I was originally had a villain idea, but then you said a villain that's personal. I have a perfect one that's been built up throughout all three movies. Why not have Tigress?
Oh my gosh, that would be a twisting dagger if Tigress became the villain.
And I don't know her motivation, but here's my soft, very ill-thought-out pitch. Everyone knows Chi, everyone knows Kung Fu, so what separates a master from someone that wants to abuse that power for their own? It's too chaotic, and now that everyone knows Chi, it's harder for Kung Fu masters to actually operate as protectors of the valley. Tigress gets upset, tries to talk to Po, but he doesn't see the problem. He thinks it's great. He's the awesome, badass Kung Fu master, Chi teacher guy out there, and no one's going to equal him. Tigress has one trait that's been true throughout all the movies. She's a go-getter. She's persistent. If she wants something, she'll do whatever it takes to get to it. I think in the Tales of the Five, I think, which is like a offshoot short film series of like each of the Furious Five members.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know if it was here or if that was in the first movie.
Secrets of the Dragon
Tigress
Scroll.
Mentions, I'm not sure, but Tigress mentioned she punched these trees that were like steel.
That was in the second movie, actually.
Okay.
Because she and Poe had a lot of one-on-one time in that one.
Yes. Okay. So they're really close friends, so she's incredibly personal. She'd shine a light on some flaws that Poe might develop in the fourth movie, if we're going the route that I'm suggesting. She's an equivalent to Poe in terms of kung fu ferocity, and Poe's taught her chi. So what she lacks in the ability to outright beat up Poe, she makes up for in she has the cold dedication that a traditional kung fu warrior would have. And maybe she sways Shifu as well. I don't know.
I think that's interesting.
I think that is
a great direction, because she's always consistently in each movie, she's always been a little bit like, I don't know about this.
Right.
And she has always been a survivor of, you know, Poe's mishaps.
Right.
And so I can definitely see that happening. I also can see my big thought, if that were to happen, if Tigress was presented as the villainess, I would say, oh my gosh, how are we going to redeem Tigress? Because I feel like if we made her an irredeemable villain,
right,
that would leave a sour taste in my mouth. So
what I would do, is I'd have the big bad and then make Tigress the second big bad. So
yeah,
Star Wars did this with Return of the Jedi. They took Darth Vader and made him go from the big bad to the secondary villain. So that way he could be redeemed. So maybe there's a villain that is more psychological. Like he has powers where he can literally get inside someone's head or show them things like memories or, you know, whatever. He persuades and pushes and guides people, kind of like Ares in Wonder Woman. He's more of a background guy. So we know Poe could easily take him out, but this guy ends up converting Tigress and maybe some other people, and they're kind of the face of the movement or whatever's going on, but this guy's kind of the reason for it.
And maybe he uses chi to speak to people mentally, and so Poe is convinced, oh my gosh, he's mind-controlling them. But actually they're like, no, Poe, we actually don't think it's a great idea that you're deputizing every person in the valley. People are getting hurt whenever raiders are invading. They think they can take them on, and they get hurt, and families get torn apart. And I don't know. There's just a lot of cool things that we could do.
Yeah, or there's vigilantes that show up in the valley.
Yeah.
People that say, okay, well, I know enough kung fu. Like, I don't need to, you know, rely on the kung fu masters. I can be my own kung fu master. And there's a lack of order. And because here's the thing, I could easily see this. Poe's really good at accepting people. He's really hard at laying down the law. Discipline is not a strong suit.
That's
so good. I could see him just try and solve all this by saying, okay, Tigress will handle it. Tigress will handle it. Tigress will do all the bad stuff. She'll do all the dirty work. I don't need to do that. I'm Poe. People like me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that makes Tigress resentful. It makes her really upset. She tries to go to Poe because she's a good friend, but then Poe just, in the moment, the context isn't there, and he just cold shoulders her or ignores her or seems very insensitive, and that just kind of takes her over the edge.
I kind of see Poe becoming like the Disney Hercules figure, where like he's almost like the Michael Jordan of the Valley of Peace, where like he was already famous in the first, like in the second and third, but now he's like ascended to God level of just like, oh man, there's merchandising and everything for Poe, and like he's just become so big to almost a comedic level, you know, because we still want comedy in this movie.
Well, they've hinted at this for a while. There is already Poe merch. There's a person that wins the Poe lookalike contest, and all this is skadoosh.
I love it.
But all that was spearheaded by Mr. Ping. Now that Poe is a chi warrior and saved the valley, and the last image we saw was him teaching everyone chi, what's stopping exactly what you're talking about? All these seeds are already here.
Yeah.
You just got to tug at them a little bit.
Yeah.
And make
I love
a conflict that emphasizes it, you know?
Yeah. I think that will deliver on both of the things that I want. A good personal villain and also well-choreographed action, because we know exactly the fighting style that Tigress uses. We would just see it with a little more brutality mixed in. Because she is, and more conflictedness in her heart, because she's fighting the people she cares about, but she stands against them ideologically. So
right. And I can see if there's like a minor villain or a major villain that's kind of in the background, maybe he's convincing Tigress of these things, and she says, no, I'm not going to fight Poe. And the guy says, okay, well, at least give me this one thing that's hidden in the Jade Palace that's really valuable. Get it to me, and then we'll be okay. And so she's like, I can do that. And then she gets caught in the act. Poe assumes she's a villain, even though maybe she had good intentions. And then that's kind of what sets them on a more violent confrontation than maybe either of them initially wanted. You know, there's ways you can play into that where it increases that conflict.
I'm looking here at the Chinese zodiac of what kind of animals we could use as the villain here. Because I feel like they use a lot of the creatures from the zodiac. We've got the viper. We've got the monkey. We've got the rooster, the pig, the ox, the tiger.
We don't
I feel
have a
like
pig yet.
We have rabbits. Rabbits are left. Goats are left. No, there was a goat actually in Kung Fu Panda 2. Never mind. Rabbits, rats, dragons.
The rabbit could have speed. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dragons already integrate into the mythos as dragon warrior. So
yeah,
I don't know.
That's true. What sort of Chinese, I'm just trying to think of like a traditional Chinese animal that would that would be a good fit for this next villain.
I think visuals and costume design are really going to carry the villain.
Yeah. What if she's just another kind of ape, maybe? Like an orangutan?
Sure.
You know, she could, you know, if she's long, less of a physical arms. Threat, maybe she's got this like,
I think more, I would want a creature that's more agile. So orangutan could work, or a rabbit.
Yeah.
I think a lot of care would need to be taken to differentiate that rabbit from, say, Judy Hopps. You wouldn't want just a standard rabbit. You'd want a rabbit with a little bit of flavoring, villainous or villain flavoring added to it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Huh.
But I don't know.
It's another tiger. Careful. I don't know.
Maybe
a white tiger. That'd be kind of cool.
Here's a thought, actually.
Yeah.
Now that I'm thinking about it, and this is turning to an itch to pitch, so I need to slow down.
I'm having fun.
What's one villain that hasn't been truly killed off? Tai Lung. He's in the spirit realm, but we've already gone there. Tigress has an idea. She has some thoughts, but she doesn't know what to think. She needs someone that's unbiased. Someone that has seen and is familiar with the darker side of Kung Fu teaching. So she is able to contact Tai Lung within the spirit realm. Maybe in the spirit realm, his typical paralysis power doesn't work because he's a spirit. So he's not really a big threat to Tigress anymore, but they end up having a conversation and we get to see different layers to Tai Lung.
I like that. Maybe he remains anonymous just as a whispered voice from the spirit realm that's influencing Tigress in some way, and then it turns out to be Tai Lung at the end for the third act. Another animal that I looked at, Daniel, was a pangolin. Those like armored armadillo kind of things with like the big claws at the front. Kind of smaller, but also like a threat because how are you gonna act? Like, how are you gonna hit their pressure points? You know,
that's true.
That could be kind of cool.
I like that.
Anyway,
maybe when he's using chi, his shell kind of ignites or the slits in between the plating.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I like it.
I'm getting too excited for this movie that may never happen.
Yeah, I know. This is not going to happen at all, but oh man, it's really fun talking about it and speculating. Sun Bear. That could be cool.
We need to stop.
Yep.
We're going to be here another hour.
You're absolutely right. Let's wrap it up before we go down another rabbit hole.
Gosh dang it. Well, guys, we're Daniel and James, and you've been listening to our podcast. Our podcast. What was our podcast called again?
Podcast of Movies. The one that everyone listens to. The Listen To podcast.
Okay. Well, we're Daniel and James, and you've been listening to our podcast, Maker of Widows. Have a good one.